Welcome to Tardi Mechanach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Adina Schmidman. Today, ignite potential. Today is the day that we turn to you to support the OU Women's Initiative. It's the day that you can recognize your Nachyomi teachers, donate in their honor, donate in honor of your Nachyomi classmates, support the Torat Imecha Nachyomi program. Along with Torah learning, the OU Women's Initiative focuses on leadership development, mikvah attendant and director sense and sensitivity training across North America, lay leadership support and cohort building. Our summit last year brought 150 women together, and we recently launched COLI Chicago, Community Organization Leadership Initiative. Our mental health fellowship provides a foundation and cohort for Rebbetzins, outreach, and chinuch professionals and kala teachers. As soon as you finish listening to Nachyomi, take a moment to be an OU Women's Initiative supporter. Support the OU Women's Initiative so that we can continue to be there for you, your learning, your leadership, our community. Go to upreaching.com/OU/WI giving. And now for today's perek.
Welcome to Torat Imecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Sarah Malka Winter, and today we will be learning Sefer Melachim Beis, Perek Dalet, Chapter 4. After the story in Chapter 3 of national import and consequence, we now see Elisha as he helps not an entire nation, but one woman, and then another. We meet two amazing women in this chapter. First, the wife, or as we will see, the widow of one of the B'nai Nevi'im, and so in verse 1, the Isha achas minashei B'nai Nevi'im tzaka el Elisha lemar, one woman, a wife of one of the B'nai Nevi'im, cries out to Elisha saying, Avdecha ishi meis, your servant, my husband, died. And you know that your servant feared God. And the creditor has come to take my two children for him as slaves. Chazal tell us, who was this woman? Who was the creditor? And why were they in debt? This was none other than the widow of Ovadia, who, as we will recall from Melachim Aleph, had together with his wife saved, hid, and supported 100 prophets at tremendous cost to themselves because Izebel, the wicked queen, was on a rampage to kill Nevi'im. They hid them in two caves, 50 in each, and provided them with all of their needs until they had literally used up all of their money and needed to borrow. Ironically, the only one wealthy enough who was willing to lend the money to continue their rescue mission was Izebel's son, Yehoram ben Ahav. And he, in his cruelty, charged them interest. And so the debt grew and grew. And then Ovadia died, and his widow was left penniless and alone. Yehoram threatened to take her two sons as slaves, since she didn't have the money to repay the now exorbitant amount. Chazal tell us that he had plans to put these kids to work in the service of his pagan gods. And so this woman cried out to Elisha for help. She said, you know that my husband had been someone who feared Hashem. In fact, in Melachim Aleph, the Pasuk itself testifies, Ovadia haya yare es Hashem ma'od, that Ovadia had feared God so much. Here in chapter 4, verse 2, Vayomer Elaha Elisha. Elisha says to her, Ma'a eselach, what can I do for you? Hagidi li mayesh lach babayis, tell me please, what do you have in your house? Vatomer, and she said, Ein l'shifchascha kol babayis, ki emasuch shemen. I don't have anything in my house except one jar of oil. All she had was a tiny jar of oil. This is significant. Malbim quotes Chazal that Ovadia had not just provided the Nevi'im with food, he had even given them oil in the cave, allowing them to continue to study Torah. What an expression of the generosity and priorities of Ovadia. And now his family will be saved through oil. So Elisha tells her, L'chisha alilach kelim min hachutz, in verse 3, go borrow dishes from out. Meis kol shchenayach, from all your neighbors. Kelim rekim, empty dishes. Al tam'iti, don't get a few. And in verse 4, and come in and close the door behind you and your children, and pour into all of these dishes, v'hamalei tasi'i, and move away the full ones. That's funny language. And actually, the commentaries tell us that there was a sort of assembly line where her sons would pass her empty dishes and she would pour the oil. Why? Rashi explains that Hashem had miraculously turned this oil jar into an oil spring, and springs don't move. And so in verse 5, she did it. And in verse 6, when all the dishes were full, Vatomer Elbina Hagisha Elai Otkali, Vayomre Laha Ein Otkali. She said to her son, bring me another dish. And he said to her, there are no more dishes. Vayamod Hashamen. And the oil stopped. And she went back in verse 7 to the Isha Lokim, to Elisha, and he told her to sell the oil and repay her creditors. Bat ubanayach techi banosar, and you and your children will live with what's left. There is a Medrash on Eishes Chayil that connects the verses of Eishes Chayil to the special women of Tanakh. And this Medrash explains that the verse of Tzofia halichos besa, v'lechem atzlos lo sochel, she oversees the goings-on in her home, and the bread of laziness she does not eat. This is a praise for this woman, who is accredited not only for the tremendous charity and life-saving mission of saving 100 prophets, but also in reaching out for help so that her sons don't end up the slaves of Yehoram and his idols. And there is another medrash that connects the story to the one that preceded it. Remember the anger at the end of chapter 3? Hashem was so angry at the behavior of the Jewish people, at their apathy, at their lack of commitment, lack of sacrifice, lack of drive. And then there is this woman, this Eishes Ovadia, who cared so much, who gave so much, who partnered with her husband and sacrificed everything to save the B'nai Nevi'im. And the Medrash says, this woman, this little woman who no one knew, who was so helpless and afraid, she saved the nation because she demonstrated that we are alive as a nation, that there is hope for us as a people, ready to give to Hashem and to his children. And if we are counting, according to Abarbanel, this has been the fifth miracle that Elisha has performed. And now, in Pasuk Ches, we meet the second woman. Vayihi hayom, and it was a day, vayavor Elisha el Shunem, and Elisha passes by Shunem. Visham isha gedola, and there is a great woman there. Matachazek bo le'echol lachem, and she urged him to eat bread at her house. Vayihi midei avro yesor shama le'echol lachem, and so whenever he would pass, he would eat bread there. Why did she do this? Ralbak tells us that Elisha at this time had not yet become world famous. Why does she invite him and persuade him to eat at her home? Because this was her way with all travelers and people in need. Her generosity and kindness was kind of reminiscent of Avraham Avinu and Sarah. She actually sought out people to help, considering it a privilege and opportunity. And just as Avraham gets angels, she gets Elisha the Navi. But in Pasuk Tes, verse 9, she realizes something. Vatomer Elisha, she says to her husband, Hine nayadati ki ish Elokim kadoshu over Elenu tamid. Behold, now I know that this man of God, he is holy and is passing by us always. This man who has been coming to our house all the time, he's a holy man. Chazal tell us from here that we learn that women know their guests often better than their husbands. And she notes that the fact that he is both holy and a frequent visitor requires them to take action. And so she proposes, let's do something to make him more comfortable. In verse 10, Na'asen na'alias kir kitana, let us make a little room in our attic. V'nasim lo sham mita v'shulchan v'kisei u'menorah. And let us put there a bed, a table, a chair, and a lamp. So that when he comes to us, he can go there. And it works. And Malbim tells us that the giver that Elisha is, he is so grateful and wants to do something for his gracious and generous hostess. And so he says to Gehazi, his lad, in verse 12, call this woman of Shunem. And he called her and she stood before him. Verse 13, he says, tell her, please, you worked so hard for us, all of this craziness. What could I do for you? Could I talk for you to the king or to the general? To which she responds, In verse 13, Bisochami Anochi Yoshaves, I live amongst my people. After all, Elisha has just saved the entire Jewish nation. He certainly has protexia with the king or the general. Are there any strings you need pulled? And her response is, Bisochami Anochi Yoshaves, I live peacefully with my people. I don't need any special favors. I'm okay. Malbim offers that it was Rosh Hashanah, and he was offering on this special day, can I daven for you to the king of the world? And her answer therefore is, I appreciate the offer of davening for me special, but I would like to remain among my people. There is a zchus, a merit of being part of the tzibor, of the nation and the congregation, that I am not willing to forgo. Pretty powerful. But not helpful for Elisha, who wants to repay her. Gehazi, who is Elisha's attendant, tells Elisha, but there is something that you can help her with. She doesn't have any children, and her husband is old. And so Elisha, in verse 16, tells her, at this season, when this time comes around again, at chovekes ben, you will be hugging a child. Her response is shocking. No, my master man of God, do not disappoint your maidservant. Mitsudos explains, what is disappointment? It's when you have and lose. What was she saying? It's so hard to be childless, but I can deal with that. What I can't deal with is losing a child. Don't give me a child if he will not live. Why would she think her son won't live? She was suspicious of his wording. He didn't say, you will have a child. He said, you will hug a child. And she understood from this that Hashem has decreed on me that I can't have a child. It's not that the Navi is promising to change my reality. He feels badly that I don't have the opportunity to ever hug my own child. So he has made a bargain with Hashem. Give her a temporary child, just for a little bit. And so she speaks strongly and decisively to Elisha. I don't want this. Please don't do this for me. It will be more painful for me in the end. Well, the story continues, and she does become pregnant, and she does have a baby, and he grows into a child. One day he goes with his father to the fields, and his head begins to hurt. His father asks his servant boy to carry him home to his mother, and in Pasuk Chaf, verse 20, he lays on her knees until noon, and he dies. Her worst nightmare has come true. What does she do? She brings him up to Elisha's special room that she had built and lays him on Elisha's bed, closes the door, and tells no one of the tragedy that has just befallen her. She lets her husband know that she would like to go visit the Navi. Her husband is surprised and asks her in Pasuk 23, Madua tolechet elav hayom, lo chodesh v'lo Shabbos. Why are you going to him today? It is not Rosh Chodesh, it is not Shabbos. Other like Radak says that Rosh Chodesh and Shabbos were times that they would go visit their Rebbe, their Navi. Malbim says like a spiritual boost, almost like a mini Ola Regal, a pilgrimage. But why today? Or Radak shares the view of his father, Rav Yosef Kimchi, that it hasn't even been a month or a week since last time you went. Why are you going today? But with almost unfathomable self-control, she reveals nothing, saying only, Shalom, everything is fine. Nothing is fine. But Rashi shares she is concerned. She needs such a huge miracle, doesn't want to do anything to endanger its success. And maybe the Navi would do it, could do it, but if anyone found out, it would not happen. She goes to the mountain where Elisha is, and Elisha sees her climbing the mountain. In verse 26, he tells Gehazi, Atarutzna likrasa ve'emarla hashalom lach, hashalom li'ishech, hashalom la'yeled, vatomer shalom. Now run to her and say to her, is everything okay with you? Is everything okay with your husband, with your child? Once again, she repeats, shalom. She's not sharing. But when she reaches Elisha, she falls to the ground and grabs his feet. Gehazi tries to remove her. It seems so inappropriate for her to be grabbing the feet of the Navi. But Elisha stops him and says, Harpela, leave her alone. Don't you see how pained her spirit is? Hashem hasn't told me what happened. Radak says, until this moment, because at this moment Hashem informed Elisha of everything. But Malbim takes his words at face value. Hashem didn't tell me, and I don't know. In fact, had she done something wrong, and this was punishment, Elisha thought Hashem would have told him. So the fact that Hashem didn't tell me means I don't know what's going on, but I do know she's innocent. What is happening? And then she cries out in verse 28. Hasha'alti ben me'is Adoni? Did I ask for a child? Halo amarti lo sashla'usi? Didn't I tell you not to make a mistake with me? How could you have done this to me? This was exactly what I told you I can't handle. Elisha, again, in his extreme sensitivity, does not respond, and instead enlists and empowers Gehazi to perform this miracle, taking Elisha's stick to place on the boy to wake him up. Did Elisha really think that a miracle so great could be done so easily? Remember, Malbim said that Hashem hasn't told him. All Elisha knows, he knows from the Isha Shunamis herself, and she has not been very expressive. And so Elisha thinks at this time that the boy was merely sick, maybe in a coma, not dead. Radak says no, Elisha received a nevuah, he now knows everything. And Gehazi could have done this had he done it right. Elisha instructs him, do not talk to anyone, just go straight to the boy, intending him to go with total concentration and also to not talk about it. Chazal say that Gehazi did the opposite. He mocked the miracle to everyone he met, or according to others, he bragged about the miracle. And for any of those reasons, the boy, of course, remained dead. Elisha reaches the boy. He closes the door, sees the boy is not only dead, but has been dead since noon. And now he davens the tefillah of a lifetime. The Malbim says, until this point, we haven't really seen Elisha daven. But now he knows. He knows that he is powerless to bring a boy back to life. All he can do is prepare the body by warming it. So he davens to Hashem to please bring the boy back. And after warming the body, pacing, davening, repeating the process 7 times, the boy sneezed and woke up. And Elisha was able to call in the Isha Shunamis and say the wonderful words, you can lift up your son. One opinion brought down in Medrash is that this boy became Edo HaNavi, and the Zohar brings down that he became Chavakuk. Of course, this name, meaning hug, is so sweetly significant. There is, of course, so much in this story, so much about hope, about what looks like the end, the depths of despair, that is only the beginning. About the power of prayer, the power of gratitude, of generosity, of sensitivity. The final 2 stories in our chapter are about the B'nai Nevi'im and how Elisha takes care of them during a famine. It reminds us of the beautiful approach Elisha had, not only as a spiritual leader, but as a caregiver, provider, and loving father to his students. Both of these miracles will include both natural means and then miracles. First, he is in Gilgal and they are starving. So he instructs them to set a pot on the flame to start a stew and sends them to gather whatever wild herbs and grasses they can find. They don't realize that one of the gourds they find is actually poisonous. It's only after some of them start to eat that they realize their mistake and cry out in verse 40, Mavis Basir Yishalokim, there is death in the pot, man of God. And now, of course, they have a double problem. Some of them had eaten the poisonous stew. And of course, the rest were still suffering from hunger and famine. Elisha put some flour in the stew and it became edible. Not only that, but amazingly, as Malbim explains, once the stew in the pot had become cured, even the poison in their bodies no longer harmed them. And then the story of the loaves. Someone came from Baal Shalisha with a gift for Elisha. Chazal understand that there were actually 22 small loaves. Elisha, as always thinking of his students, told his attendant to give the loaves to the people. The Gemara says there were actually 2,200 students there, inducing his lad to cry out, Ma'atein zelif ne'mea ish. Each loaf will need to feed 100 people. How does that make sense? But Elisha responds, Ten la'am v'yochelu ki ko'amar Hashem achol v'huser. Give to the people, let them eat, because so said Hashem, they will eat and they will have leftovers. And so it was. like the lechem apanim in the Beis HaMikdash, they needed only crumbs to fill them so much that they could not even finish their whole portion. And that is how this beautiful, miraculous chapter concludes, with Elisha teaching those who are looking to learn, Hashem can do anything. Hashem can take care of us anywhere. And for those who fear God, He can provide even during a famine. Thank you for studying together Le'iloi Nishmot Imahotenu Hayikarot, Esther Oppenheimer Aleha HaShalom, and Sarah Schenker Aleha HaShalom, each deeply devoted and proud to transmit their family's Torah legacy to the next generations.